Hi everyone, this is Joseph Bushnell. I have with me today a fantastic copywriter. His name is Tom Trush. Tom, thank you very much for being with me today.
Thank you, Joey. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Just a quick introduction to Tom. Tom is a direct response copywriter, marketing strategist, and founder of Right Way Solutions in Phoenix, Arizona. Tom Trush has helped business owners in 126 industries develop marketing materials that attract attention and create customers. In addition to working with clients across the globe, Tom shares his educational approach to marketing at seminars and workshops, as well as in his own information products. He firmly believes you can't go wrong in your marketing when you show compassion and a desire for helping people. His work regularly appears in offline periodicals, sales literature, and on several online sites, including the American Express Open Forum, Lawyer Marketing Alert, and Alltop. Tom is also the author of The Reluctant Writer's Guide to Creating Powerful Marketing Materials, 61 Easy Ideas to Attract Prospects and Get More Customers, and the soon-to-be-released The You Effect, How to Transform Ego-Based Marketing into Captivating Messages that Create Customers. So clearly a very accomplished copywriter and author as well. Tom, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Joey. I appreciate it.
Thank you. So Tom, just first of all, if you could give us a little bit of background about yourself and how you got into marketing and found your way into copywriting.
Sure. Well, this is something that it wasn't something I set out to do, really, to be honest with you. Even back in college, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. And I remember taking a class, a career decision-making class, and even after taking that, I hadn't narrowed it down. But one thing that I knew is that, I love sports, and I played basketball for a couple years in college, and I thought, well, I think it'd be awesome to be able to go to sporting events and write about sporting events. Mm-hmm. And, of course, as a reporter, you have the best seat in the house. And so I thought, well, I'm going to go into journalism, and my game plan is to write about sports. So That's where I started. Is I had an internship at a health and fitness publication, and I started covering some like triathlons, different running events, and it was great because I got to go out to these events and interview people and get that experience. But what I realized quickly is that it was going to take quite a bit to have a successful career, one that actually is going to make money as a journalist. And so I started looking a little bit, elsewhere after doing the internship, and I got a job at a newswire service, and I was a editor and newsroom supervisor for this newswire service. Basically, what we do is we get press releases, and we'd send out the press releases to wherever the clients would want it to go around the globe. So what that did is, though, it opened my eyes to marketing copy and what companies were doing to promote themselves, especially from a PR perspective. And in looking at that copy, I was thinking, boy, it seems like this could be written much better. But I never really did much about it. It was always in the back of my mind. And I was at the Newswire service for a while, and I happened to go to the library one time, and I stumbled across this book called, you may have heard of it, called The Well-Fed Writer by Peter Bowerman, and just picked it up by chance and brought it home and started reading it, and it opened up my eyes to this whole new world. And prior to it, I didn't realize that there were companies out there that would hire people to write their copy for you. I thought it was basically just you get a job maybe as a PR person or, some kind of media relations professional, and then you could write copy for the company. You just work for the company. I didn't realize that on a freelance basis, companies, they set aside budgets, and that book really opened my eyes to that. And, I thought, well, geez, maybe that's what I want to do. Because one of the things with being a journalist, I didn't like the idea of just doing always being on deadline, and the deadline took priority over the quality of the copy or the how in depth you could get with the articles that you were doing. So deadline was always the priority, and it was kind of deadline over quality, and I hated that. And I thought that getting into marketing copy, that that's a way that you can start focusing more attention on the quality, and then you know, you start bringing in that direct response aspect where, you know, you're putting some effort into seeing what can get people to take action just because of something that they read. And I just, you know, I love that challenge. And this was like back in 2001. And I thought, well, you know, I was still working at the Newswire Service. I thought, but this is what I really want to do. So why don't I just start on the side and see if there's any interest out there. And because at the Newswire Service, people would call in. They say, man, we really don't want to write this copy. You know anybody that you could recommend? Mm-hmm. And I couldn't really say anything. But to be honest, you know, I'd go home at night and I would contact these clients and say, hey, we got to keep this kind of quiet. You know, yeah, I would love to write this copy. And so I started doing that. And by the end of 2004, I had built up a client base just working on part-time that, you know, I finally said, you know, this is it. No more the Newswire Service. I'm going to, you know, jump out on my own. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's kind of where things took off. It was interesting. As soon as I put in my notice, we found out that my wife was pregnant with our first daughter. I was like, uh-oh, yeah, this has got to work now.
Yeah.
And, you know, fortunately, that put some added pressure on me, the pressure that I needed. And, you know, I've been on my own doing the direct response copywriting since the end of 2004. So that's, I guess, a short version of the long story. I mean, there's lots of other things that went on in between there, but, you know, that's the Cliff's Notes version.
Sure, okay. So in a way, you learn to write, first of all. Then you kind of learned the marketing side of things and combined the two to the point where you were able to go alone and go freelance and become a freelance copywriter. So that's a great story. What would you say are some of the most common mistakes that you see companies make in their marketing materials?
Well, here's something that, you know, that's really big. And this is something that's kind of the overall theme when I'm talking to clients. And that is that in their marketing pieces, the focus is too much on the company and not on the prospects. And, you know, so you can see a lot of times that, say they're putting out an ad or something. Well, the primary focus of that ad is going to be on a company name or this logo, and it takes up all the attention. And, I mean, you see this all the time on marketing pieces, you know, whether that be in ads, you know, online on websites, brochures, whatever it is. Where this, it's just too much attention is on the company and the greatness behind the company. They want to say how long we've been in business and we've got this great staff and, you know, yada, 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 whatever. You know, and what they don't realize, it's the prospects. You need to talk directly to your prospects and think about, you know, what are your prospects' problems, and then use your marketing copy to address those problems. And, you know, I think one of the easiest ways to take the focus off your company. And, you know, as I, you know, you mentioned my second book, and that's kind of what I focus on in my second book is this ego-based marketing. One of the ways that you can really take the attention off you or your company is to really think about, again, those prospect problems. What questions do they have? And, you know, my background, you know, just from a family perspective, you know, both my parents were teachers. My wife is a teacher. And, you know, with my marketing, I really think about from, I look at myself as a teacher, you know, teaching prospects how to solve their problems through a company's marketing. So the common questions they're having, what information should they know? And really making that the focus of a marketing piece and not the logo, not the company name. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the main thing, I see education over pitching. I mean, if there's any, you know, one item I like to draw attention to is, you know, educate your prospects, because we all have this inner desire to know more than what we already know. I mean, we're naturally curious. And if we have problems, a lot of times, if you have a really pressing problem, you can't stop thinking about it. But if you look at a marketing piece that it gives you some answers to those problems, well, you're naturally going to be attracted to that marketing piece. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and you compare that to a marketing piece where all you're doing is pitching. Well, there's no connection there.
Sure. I mean, it's really interesting, Tom, because it's almost kind of an unnatural way to think and to write, isn't it? You know, we experience our world from our inside our own heads. So that's why naturally kind of the tendency is to kind of be ego driven when you're writing, seeing it from your point of view. But actually you need to see it from your market's point of view. So how do you do that? I mean, is it a difficult process? And could you give us a couple of, you know, tidbits on how to actually kind of forget yourself and focus on them?
Sure. Sure. Well, you know, it's easiest to write about you or your company. I mean, it's familiar. And so that's why you see it so often, because that you could just fall back on it. You know your company, you know your business, you know your business, you know yourself. So, hey, why not write about us? But you know, you can switch that around and you know, again, going back to those common questions you hear, every business has certain things that prospects ask right off the bat. And you have to think about those. And, you know, I say, you know, why continuously repeat those answers, whether it be on a phone call, whether it be in an email? You know, put that information out in your marketing materials and distribute that information to as, you know, as many people as possible. And I know, you know, you're in the, you know, with your business, and I know you're familiar with repurposing content and, especially when you have, when you're addressing these problems or these questions, you want to get that out in multiple forms, you know, whether it be in print, whether it be in audio, whether it be in video, and just, you know, distribute that out to as many places as possible, because then it helps establish your credibility and it helps establish trust. Also, you know, when you're writing about your product or service, you have to think about, you know, what are the obstacles that are preventing your prospects from buying or from taking the action that you want to take. And you need to address those as early as possible in your marketing copy, because people are naturally going to be hesitant. You know, whether they're looking at a marketing piece, an ad, whatever, especially an ad where, you know, people know when they're looking at an ad that there's going to be something that's going to get pitched to them. Well, you got to go beyond that barrier. You got to make sure and understand that, you know, what you're providing is, you know, something of value. It's worth reading.
Sure. Okay. Would you recommend sometimes maybe doing actually a formal FAQ kind of bit on your website or on your marketing materials, or do you just kind of slip it in, you know, a bit less obvious, but you know, you're still nonetheless, you're still answering those objections?
Well, I think you can do both. And in fact, you know, if you have an FAQ, each answer to your common questions, to your most frequently asked questions, I mean, that's, you know, whether that be an article or just a little blurb on your website, I think it should be, you know, have some priority placement so that that's something that your prospects see. Because if they have this question or they have this problem in their head and then they get an answer to it before they even have to contact you, well, that helps establish an instant connection. And again, it goes back to that trust and credibility. It's like you've stepped into that prospect's mind you know, they realize that you know what they're thinking. Whereas, you know, on the flip side, you know, they read a marketing piece, most marketing pieces, and it's all about the company or, you know, how great the company is. You now have a marketing piece that's addressing what's in your prospects' minds, and that's much more powerful. And that's what's going to create a connection.
Sure. Okay. So what are the absolute fundamental items that you must have in place in any marketing piece to give yourself the best possible opportunity for securing leads?
Well, I think the common answer to that, you know, if you're going from an ego-based marketing perspective is, you know, you think you have to have your company name and you think you have to have your logo. And, you know, I tend to go away from that. And, you know, I say, if anything, if we're taking it down to an absolute minimum, the three things you need to have are a headline, an offer, and a call to action. Now, if you look at most marketing, especially ego-based marketing, those are three things that you often don't see. Like the headline may be just the company name, and then you might see a logo next to it. But you have to realize, you know, a prospect's buying decisions, they have nothing to do with your name or your logo. And so why should that take the priority in your marketing piece? Now, granted, there are big companies out there, you know, say Coke, Amazon, all those, where they have these huge budgets, and they can afford to do that. But most businesses, you know, you just don't have the budget. You don't have the time. You don't have the energy to be able to dedicate, you know, in some cases, an expensive marketing piece to just putting out a logo or a company name. So, you know, I say start off with your headline. Think about what's that primary problem that your prospects have and how can you address that. And one of the easiest ways to create a headline is to think about, you know, I heard this, I forgot where I heard this mentioned, but it's such a great tip, where you have to think about yourself almost like a headline genie. If you were standing in front of your ideal prospect and you said that you could grant any wish related to your the product or service that you provide, what would your prospect want? Because you got to think about, your prospect doesn't want your product or service. What they want is the end result that your product or service provides. And so if you could figure that out, then, you know, that's an easy way to create an attention-grabbing headline. And then, you know, the offer, you have to, you know, offer your prospect something. And a lot of times, you know, I'm of the belief that most prospects, you know, they want the ability to collect information, especially when they're shopping for a product or service, without human interaction. And it's just more comfortable. You think about, you go into a mall, say you're shopping for jeans or something. You walk into a store, and immediately somebody a lot of times is on you. And you're, and they're like, oh, can I help you? Can I help you? Well, you know, what's your response a lot of times? Like, oh, I'm just looking. I'm just looking. You know, you just don't like that pressure. And so I like to, you know, with an offer a lot of times is to start establishing that relationship to build credibility and trust and deliver some type of information with my offer that doesn't require human interaction. And again, it goes about back to thinking about your prospects. Granted, if you're in business, you want prospects to call you to instantly pick up that phone and you know, want to, you know, open up their wallets and spend money with you. But the reality is, you know, you have to build credibility and trust these days. And promises, I mean, they're thrown around like rice at a wedding, especially online these days. So you've got to create that that credibility and trust first. So you know, you have to have that offer. And then the final thing is the call to action. You can't just put a phone number. You just can't put a website. You have to tell your prospects exactly what to do and then give them a reason to do it.
Okay. What sort of examples, Tom, in terms of the online world, what kind of call to action specifically? So say you said leading people to a website is maybe not enough. How can you give a stronger call to action?
Well, I mean, something, you know, you can still direct people to a website, but then tell them something specific on the website. I mean, a lot of times with like pay-per-click and stuff, where you'll see there'll be an ad to direct you over to a website, but then, you know, you go over to the website and what was promoted in the ad, you have a hard time finding on the website. You can't find it. So, you know, if you're going to a website, maybe it's a special report that you're giving away, a video series, or, you know, like we're doing here, some kind of an interview, something that's going to immediately establish some type of value that helps build your credibility and trust, but also helps establish you as an authority in your industry. So I'm not against directing people to a website because, I mean, a website is a great place where you can deliver information without human interaction. It's just if you're going to direct somebody there, give them something specific to look for, to request, and, you know, I'm a big fan of developing lists. And, you know, on a website, it's a great opportunity to collect email addresses. And, you know, if you have a website where you're not collecting email addresses in exchange for some type of information, well, you're missing a huge, huge opportunity. And so, you know, by all means, direct people to a website, but just, you know, give them a reason to be there and then deliver some information of value.
Sure. Okay. And if you're new to your industry, how can you compete on a marketing level with competitors who are more well known than you are, own far more experience and have a bigger budget than you? What can you do to compete with, you know, such a competitive environment?
Well, I think it goes back to educating your prospects. And you have this advantage because most marketing is focused on, you know, like I said before, this ego-based approach. And where you can immediately establish yourself is if you're delivering, you know, valuable information in your marketing. And whenever I'm putting together a marketing piece, it was, you know, Gary Bensavenga, who was, you know, a very well-known copywriter. He had this, you know, this concept that he came up with where he specifically related it towards advertising, but, you know, it can go over into marketing as well. But the idea is, when you create a marketing piece, you want it so valuable, you want the information that you're providing to be so valuable that prospects would not want to throw it away. And, you know, they would just cringe if they had to throw it away. So I think about that every time I'm putting together a marketing piece. Is the information that I'm delivering of so much value that the prospects would just cringe to throw it away? And if you're providing valuable information, educational information, you know, it's likely that your prospects are going to keep that marketing piece. So that's the first thing. Another thing is, do things to help establish yourself as authority. Now, just delivering educational information, that's going to help establish you as authority. But also, you can send out press releases so that you can, and it's not press releases that are focused on you or your company, but maybe there's a topic in your industry that's in the news. You know, maybe you have some insight to provide on that topic, so you can start being viewed as a resource in your industry. And when you're dealing with the media, you have to think about from the media's perspective, their audience. You know, what can you deliver to the media that would help entertain or educate their audiences? And so press releases are a great thing if you're looking to educate an audience. And then even like, what you're doing here, where you're interviewing people in industries, related to yours, you can take, just look at who are some people in your industry that are, well-known figures or that are established authorities. And you can contact those people and, ask for interviews, ask for insight, because then you get, it's like, your prospects now see you communicating with an authority in the industry, somebody that they already know. Well, naturally, they're going to connect the two of you. It's one of those things where you can kind of jump over everybody else, and your credibility can now be linked in with somebody else in your industry. So, I mean, those are just a few ideas, and I mean there are much more. I think the main thing is, just think about educating your prospects. What way can you educate your prospects? Because everybody else can be focused on talking about how great their companies are, but if you focus on educating your prospects and giving them good, valuable information, that's immediately going to help establish yourself in your industry.
Absolutely. Okay. What are some specific words that you can use in your marketing copy to better persuade your prospects?
Well, I'll give you a couple, and I'll first tell you my a combination of two words that these are my absolute favorite to use in marketing pieces. And those are the words how to. And again, we're going back to that educational component. And you think about, what's some kind of problem related to your product or service that your prospects have. And you can, put out a marketing piece, how to do, whatever, XYZ, whatever it is. Think about that problem, because, I said it before, we're actually curious. We have a desire to know, know more than what we already do know. And, when you see the words how to, you immediately know that you're going to get some kind of insight into the problem that's presented in that headline. Mm-hmm. And so, I call, how to, I put out an article about the words how to, and I call it the two most powerful words you can use during a recession. And, for the last few years, the economy's gone through some tough times, and, you think about when times are tough, people, if they're out of work, a lot of times they're going back to school. They're trying to learn new trades. So they're naturally in this mindset of learning. And how to is a way that you can really, tap into that mindset and really take advantage of what your prospects are thinking. So that's the first two words I like to use. The second tip is a word that Robert Cialdini has quite a few studies of this one in his book Influence: The Psychology of Persuasion, and the word is because. And in his book, he talked about an example where there was a social psychologist, and she was at a library, and she was attempting to cut in front of several people that were at a copier. And I don't know, if you read this book, are you familiar with this study, Joey?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I've read the book. I can't remember the exact study that you're referring to, but I've read the book a couple of years ago.
Yeah, basically, I mean, what it was, she's in this line, and there's a whole bunch of people in line, and she wants to find a way to cut up to the front, and so she gave a bunch of different statements to see what would work. And the bottom line is, I mean, you can read the whole study in the book, but she found that when she used the word because in her statement, like, I have five copies. May I use the Xerox machine because I have to make some copies? A statement like that, she had a far greater response. Like, people were very open to letting her cut. And, you know, this test was done multiple times, and, you know, always it came back to was the word because. And so because is the word that I try to incorporate into my copy quite a bit, because you have to give people reasons why that you're making a request. I mean, it's just something in the mind that we're not naturally looking for. If we have a request, if you just tell somebody to do something, well, you know, yes, some people will do it. But you have to give them a reason why, and because is kind of one of those magic words. You make a statement, and then you put in the word because, and you give a valid reason why, then you know, you're much more likely to get responses.
Absolutely.
How to and because. Those are some, you know, a couple of real quick ones that you can start using immediately.
Fantastic. Okay. What are some ways that you can create desire for your product or service?
Well, I think it comes back to the you know, the credibility and you know, the trust aspect, where, you know, people like to do business, people they know, like, and trust. And if you are focused on delivering some good educational, valuable material, well, you know, people are naturally going to you know, gravitate towards you because they're going to feel comfortable with you. But then I guess one of you know, another strategy that you can use is this whole idea of thinking about the end result with your product or service, because that's what your prospect wants. You know, I mentioned before, it's not your product or service. You know, so if you're marketing your product or service, the specific product or service, stop doing that. Start, you know, targeting that end result. Because again, we're going back to, you know, we buy things for emotional reasons and then back those reasons up with logic. Mm-hmm. And so if you start thinking about that end result, what is the thing that your prospects are looking for because of your product or service? And you know, one of the great all-time copywriters, Eugene Schwartz, was just a master at doing what's called future pacing. And future pacing is basically you take an idea, an end result that your prospects have, and you explain, you know, what it's going to be like to experience that. And he has this great ad where it was for a memory product. And I wish I had the exact text here in front of me, but basically what it is he set the stage. You know, he was selling this memory product. I think it was a book or something. And he set up this situation where, you know, you now have this knowledge. So, you know, imagine now you're going to be sitting at, you know, all your friends are going to be around you, and you're going to be, you know, you're going to be kind of the focus of attention, and you're going to have so-and-so say, you know, give you a list of numbers, and you're going to be able to repeat those numbers back, you know, in specific order. But, you know, obviously the copy was much more elaborate to that and much better. But what he does is he just takes this ideal situation that he knows his prospects are having. And, you know, granted, this is quite a while ago because, you know, Eugene Schwartz isn't around anymore. But he takes about those, you know, this ideal situation, and then he makes this mental movie of you, you know, placing yourself in this situation. And it helps create desire for that product, because it's the end result. It's what you're looking for. You know, that it's what you want because of that product or service. It's not the actual product or service. So, you know, look at, you know, dig online and find some Eugene Schwartz ads. And I mean, almost every one of his ads has this future pacing element where, it creates this mental movie, and it's absolutely brilliant stuff. So if you could do that in your copy, mm-hmm. It's definitely going to increase desire for what you offer.
Brilliant. And people are just super busy these days, and especially online, there's so many distractions. So how can we keep people interested in our marketing?
Well, there's three things. The first one, and this is very, very blunt, but, you know, stop talking about yourself. And I, you know, in marketing, it's just so common to talk about you or your company or whatever. And granted, there is a place, especially if you know, you're marketing yourself, there is a place to talk about yourself. You know, there is a time for that, because people want to see that you're a real person, and you want to give insight to even, you know, how you're living your day-to-day life, because, you know, that gives something, an aspect of you that people can relate to. So yes, there is a time and place for that, but, you know, in most marketing copy, all it is about companies and, you know, the people at the company. So one, you know, stop talking about yourself. The second one, and we've already gone over this, is, you know, addressing your prospects' problems. That's what they're looking for your product or service for. Mm-hmm. You know, they have this problem that they need solved. So your marketing needs to address your prospects' problems. And then the final one is just, you know, delivering exceptional value. And it goes back to the Gary Bensavenga tip I gave before. You want to make your marketing, you want to make it so valuable that people just don't want to throw it away. And if there's just one tip, you know, one thing that'll make you a better copywriter, a better marketer, is if you just use that one tip. Just look at that your piece of paper, your blank screen, and think of yourself, you're almost like an artist. You know, an artist starts with a blank canvas. There's nothing there. But the value of what they provide, it goes up depending on what they put on that canvas or that page. And when you're writing marketing copy, you are an artist. You have the ability to create unlimited value in what you distribute out to your prospects. So, you know, deliver the most value that you can with each marketing piece.
Fantastic. That's absolutely, yeah, something I've never thought of it in that way before, Tom. That's great. One great way of marketing that I love personally as an internet marketer is email marketing. And it's just a really good, low-cost way to reach people. So do you have any tips on how to write effective emails that get opened, get read, and get responded to?
Sure, yeah. I mean, like you, I'm a huge fan of email marketing because, like you said, it's very low cost. It allows you to develop relationships and, unfortunately there is, people out there that believe that social media killed, email. And, boy, if you're doing email marketing, then, you realize that, that carries about as much truth as, a Miss Cleo commercial. Social media is just another medium, just like email is another medium for reaching your audience. They can, you use them together. So I think the main thing with email marketing, and this goes against, I think, what people often think, is if you're doing email marketing, you have to send a lot of emails. And people are afraid, if I send a lot of emails, I'm going to get labeled a spammer. People are going to want my emails. But then it goes back to how much value are you delivering in those emails? Yeah, granted, they're going to look at you as a spammer, and they're not going to want to read your emails if you're not delivering value in your emails. So, but if you are, then people are going to look forward to it. And so you have to, be consistent in sending your emails. And, trust relies on consistency. You develop trust as you're more consistent with what you do. So if you decide you want to do email marketing and you send one email today and then you wait, let's wait. I think today seems like a good day and it's, 25 days later. I think I'll send another one. Well, and then, down the road, you send, it's 30 days till you send another one. Well, there's no consistency there. You have to be consistent and regular in sending your emails because then you're going to get it so that if you're delivering value in those emails, people are going to look forward to your emails. And that's where the marketing comes in to where, you're developing a relationship. And so often with email marketing, it's just pitch, pitch, pitch. You get them on a list and you think, let's just start pitching them because now they've already raised their hand. And that's the advantage of email marketing is, once you get people to opt in, whether it's for a free report or whatever, they've raised their hands and, they know, that they're interested in what it is you offer. But now, the idea is not to pitch, pitch, pitch over and over. And you have to develop that relationship and provide some value in those emails first, before you can start pitching. And I guess also, with email marketing, it comes back to just writing any type of marketing piece. Your subject line is basically your headline. So you have to, dedicate attention to that subject line because you've got to get your emails opened. And, we can go into a lot of details on the specifics of the body of an email. But, I would just go back to if you're doing email marketing, start thinking about, what's the value that you can provide using email as a marketing medium, because it's no different than, when you're doing social media, you still want to, develop, you want to deliver value, you want to establish relationships. Email is just another way to establish those relationships, deliver value, and create credibility and trust.
Would you say, Tom, that most of your emails should be content-based? Should you, or do you kind of pitch regularly, or do you mix the two, kind of a bit of content and then maybe at the bottom an offer of some kind? I mean, how do you balance that and or mix it up?
Well, I think every email has to have some kind of an offer. It's just like any marketing piece needs to have a call to action. You want people to do something after they read your emails. And maybe that something might be to go over to your blog and read a post and maybe comment on it. But then sometimes that call to action may be to actually sell something. I would say, you know, the majority of your email should be delivering valuable content. And, you know, there's not a specific percentage on, you know, how many emails should be content, how many emails should be, you know, some kind of selling. But, I mean, you kind of get a feel of it as you communicate with your list. Because when you're communicating, you're delivering emails on a consistent basis, people start responding to your emails. They start asking you questions. So then that tells you what they're looking for. And, you know, when you have a list as well, you can survey that list. And again, those people will start telling you exactly what they're looking for, and all you have to do is deliver it. And so if you send out a survey and you see this response and something specific that you can offer, well, then of course you're going to want to, you know, create an email where you're offering that, you know, product or service, that information product, whatever it is. So it's, you just kind of have to feel out your list, and you got to feel out, you know, what are they looking for? But, you know, don't hesitate to, you know, pitch things to your list. I mean, that's the, you know, that's the advantage you have of developing a list, is you have this audience that's readily accepting of your message. And so, you know, you have to still, if you're not pitching to them, if you're not providing some product or some service, well, then you're doing them a disservice, because, you know, they're looking for something specific. You need to be the one providing it. And if you need to provide it and, you know, get paid for whatever it is that you're providing, well, you know, that's natural. We're all in business. We got to get paid.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely we do. This is something that I don't know about too much personally, Tom, but I know that you have a lot of experience with. And basically the question is, what are some ways for increasing ad readership and response in newspapers, magazines, or other similar offline publications?
Well, I think the key here is, you know, making your ad so that it doesn't look like an ad. And we touched on this a little bit earlier. When people read ads, they immediately, in their mind, they know it's an ad, so they know they're going to get pitched something. Well, I like to take the approach of, you know, making your ad look more like editorial. And, you know, granted, in some publications, they're going to slap on a label and they're going to have to put on their advertisement, and so that people know it's an advertisement if you're going the advertorial route. But still, you know, I don't see any problem with that, because, you know, we go back to value. If you're delivering extreme value with that ad, information that's helpful to the audience, reading that magazine, reading that newspaper, or, you know, whatever publication it is, it doesn't matter if it's in an ad format. It doesn't matter if it's an editorial. You know, it's not like there's something in your prospect's mind that's like, oh, I read this, and the format looks like an ad. Oh, geez, the information is worthless now. You know, it's, if you're delivering value, then it doesn't matter, you know, what format it is that your prospects are reading that information. But, you know, I still think if you can make your ads look less like ads and more like editorial, then, you know, one, it's going to help increase your readership. And, you know, if you have this enticing headline, you know, something that's going to attract attention, people are going to read it even though it's an ad. And, you know, I know that, you know, a lot of people are they're hesitant to do that. They think, well, then I'm trying to trick people. Well, no, you're not trying to trick people. You're trying to deliver value to people. And, you're trying to trick people if, you know, if you're trying to, you know, sell something and you're trying to take advantage of people. But if you're looking out for your prospect's best interest, then, you know, there's no tricking about it. You're just delivering good educational information.
Sure. It's just about getting their attention in a way that's kind of, I guess, grabs their attention. It doesn't have to be, you know, there's no trickery involved in that.
Correct.
So totally,
correct,
totally agree with you, Tom. And last of all, many businesses aren't able to do as much marketing as they would want to because they've got limited budgets. So what's your best tip for cutting marketing expenses and still having a really effective campaign?
Well, I think it comes down to developing lists. When you have lists, you're able to market to an audience that's already raised their hand and told you that they're interested in what you're providing. Now, one of the issues that I run in with, especially when I'm talking to prospects for the first time or even clients for the first time, is they're constantly chasing after a new audience. They're looking for something, looking for this audience at all times. But when you have your own list, this allows you to market to an audience, an eager audience, whenever you want. And so, like, I'll have, prospects, they'll call me and they'll say something like, well, hey, I just got this opportunity. There's this newspaper that just started in my neighborhood and I can advertise in here and it's only going to cost me, $100 or whatever it is. It's going to be something really, really cheap. And I'll say, well, is your audience reading that magazine? Are they reading that publication? Well, I don't know, but it's cheap. So they'll think it's a great thing to do, but, their audience isn't there. Mm-hmm. But if you have your own list, your audience is there. And so by having your own list, you're not constantly chasing. And it gets really expensive if you're constantly chasing after an audience. So, that's why it's so advantageous when you have, your marketing pieces or an ad. We talked about directing people over to a website. Say you run an ad in some kind of a maybe it's a newspaper or something. You direct them over to a website, give them some information in exchange for a free report or whatever it is. Then you have that name, you have that email address, and you now can market to those people. And you just gave yourself more value to yourself besides of what you put in to run the ad. So if you spent $100 to run the ad, well, and maybe you didn't get immediate responses, well, you just collected all these names because they just gave you their email addresses. There's a lot of value there. Mm-hmm. And so, I think the main thing is, not chasing after these audiences. And whatever you're doing, whatever type of marketing piece you're doing, always work on building your list. And that may be through social media. That may be through email. Another email tip, this kind of, to remind me of is when you are sending your emails, put a note, a single line at the bottom of your emails. And I do this on every email that I send out. And it says, please feel free to share this information with the people in your network. And I'll tell you, it is amazing how many people actually do that. Wow. And granted, if you're providing information of value, people are naturally going to want to share it. But if you give people direction, and you tell them to do it, they're even more likely to do it. And so then you have somebody share your email with somebody else. Well, then they're naturally, they'll probably go over to your website, and then you have an opportunity to capture that email address. So then you're building your list off of your own email marketing. So you always have to think about how can you develop your list. And, I know we're talking, touching on email quite a bit, but, snail mail as well. I mean, it's an incredible opportunity sending through the old-fashioned mail, putting a stamp on something and sending it through the email, because so many people are moving away. They don't see the opportunity in snail mail, but there's incredible opportunity. There's less attention. There's less competition. Mm-hmm. And there's often now when you receive something in the mail, there's more value associated with it. You get an email, you can easily delete that. If you deliver something through snail mail, especially if you get your, it's a whole other thing, getting your envelopes open so people can actually see what you offer. But if you're delivering something through snail mail and you get that opened, well, there's that perceived value now because there's less people sending through snail mail. So, yes, develop your list through email, but also develop your list through, sending the old-fashioned way of just snail mail as well.
Sure, okay. Obviously, sending snail mail is more expensive than sending an email. Do you have any tips for anyone that's first timers, Tom, that's never sent snail mail before, on how to kind of keep costs down, or at least to maybe test, see how it goes to begin with? Is there any sort of tips there to keep for those who are still on a fairly low budget?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, with snail mail, yes, you definitely want to test. But I think, the tip that I would give, if you're just getting started in snail mail, yes, you can go out there and you can buy lists and you can get really narrowly targeted lists, through a broker. But I would say if you're just getting started, start with the people who already know you and, develop that first before you go out and start, buying lists. Because, you know, maybe it's as simple as just sending out an email to your list and saying that, you know, you're going to start doing some snail mail. And if you're delivering, this goes back to delivering value through your emails. If you're delivering value and then you just send out an email to your list and say, you know, I'm thinking about starting this, you know, a tip sheet, and I'm going to be sending it via snail mail. If you'd like to receive it, you know, just reply back with your address. And, you know, that's something that I did that exact thing when I started sending snail mail. It works like a charm because you've already established that relationship with your email list. Well, now you can also communicate with them through snail mail. And, you know, they're giving you permission to do that. Now, also, you have your clients. And if anything, most businesses, they don't communicate that often with their clients after they've already collected a paycheck. You know, it's like, all right, I got paid, I'm done. And, you know, snail mail is a great way to stay in contact. And, of course, you can do it through email, too. But, you know, snail mail, it goes back to the perceived value of what you're receiving in the email now that fewer people are using snail mail. There's some value with when people get something through the mail. So communicate with your clients as well through snail mail. And, you know, what that allows you to do, when you communicate through snail mail with people who already know you, well, then you start working out the kinks. And you just send one package out, and you immediately know, well, hey, I want to do this differently next time. And you'd rather, you know, do that on the cheap where you're communicating on a small scale than if you just go out and you buy this list and then, you know, you mail to the list and you spend a lot more money mailing to the list. Now, granted, when you do get a list and you buy a list, of course you want to test, you know, small before, you know, you don't want to buy a 5,000 name list and send all 5,000 right off the bat. I mean, you know, segment it out a bit, you know, try something to the first 1,000 and then, you know, another 1,000, change something up. So, yeah, I mean, that's some, you know, quick tip with your snail mail.
Yeah, that's great. And I love that, Tom, that you said as well. It's kind of almost like the opt-in thing, you know, online, you know, people opt in to your email list. And I guess, like you're saying there, it's the same with snail mail. You know, you might not have a list of hundreds or thousands of people doing it that way, building it yourself, but they're definitely going to be very, you know, very, very targeted, aren't they? Which is exactly what we want. So, yeah, brilliant. Thank you very much for that. That's absolutely brilliant tips. Tom,
yeah.
Could you tell us about your first book, first of all? Could you just let us know about the Reluctant Writer's Guide to Creating Powerful Marketing Materials, 61 Easy Ideas to Attract Prospects and Get More Customers?
Sure. Yeah, that book, you know, I wrote that book because who I was targeting with it is that reluctant writer. Who is that person that took on the role of marketing writer in a company? Because I was running into a lot of people who, you know, they had this role. I mentioned back when I worked at the Newswire service, there was a lot of people that would call up and they say, well, you know, geez, we don't want to write this. And, you know, these would be, you know, they're PR people and they don't want to write their own press releases. And so it's just kind of this light bulb went off. I was thinking there's so many people out there that, they have to write, they think that they're not a good writer. And boy, you know, it's just, you don't have to be a great writer to get responses on your marketing. And I know that, you know, some people may hear that, you know, some other copywriters and think, oh no, you've got to be a great writer, but you don't. I mean, yeah. And I wanted to give some information to people to give them quick tips so that they can, you know, start getting responses on their marketing, even if they're not a great writer, or even if they've taken on this role reluctantly. And so there's 61 ideas in there, and, you know, each idea is a chapter. And you can read the book cover to cover, and you can, you know, get all these ideas at once. But what I did with this book is made it so that pretty much you can open up anywhere in the book, and you can read, you know, whatever page you land on, and you can have a tip that you can start using immediately. And so that was the whole idea, because – you know, when you're a reluctant writer and you don't like writing, well, you know, why should you have to spend hours upon hours, you know, thumbing through this book and reading every single word? And granted, yeah, I want people to read every single word, I mean, because there's some good, valuable information in there. But I also want to make it easy on them. You know, I want them, if they don't want to read cover to cover, you know, open it up and get a quick tip. And you'll start applying that tip and then move on to the next one. Because if you're going to try to implement all 61, you know, that's overwhelming. That's really overwhelming. So, you know, pick a few tips and then, you know, move on to the next one.
Absolutely, that sounds like a fantastic idea. I love the fact that it's almost kind of a reference guide. If you and I know this personally, Tom, that people are all, you know, business owners are always looking for ways to get more customers. So who wouldn't want 61 new easy ideas of how to do that? So that sounds absolutely great. Can you tell us a little bit more about your second book and when's it going to be released?
Well, the second book should be out next month. Let's see, we're in March right now. Yeah, so in April, it should be out next month. And that book, it's similar to the first book in that the format where, you know, you can pretty much open anywhere and get, you know, a tip that you can start applying. But the focus of this book is all about the ego-based marketing and how to transform your marketing from ego-based and creating compelling messages that create customers just by making slight changes in your marketing copy. And we touched on it quite a bit that most marketing is ego-based. And I called it the you effect for a couple reasons. And when people see, you know, it's not talking about like you as in like, you know, me or you, Joey. It's you as the prospect. It's you as the actual word you. And you know, at Yale, there was a study that was done, and what it was, where it was in the psychology department, again, several years ago, where they took the highest response ads, and I forgot what the time frame was, but it's mentioned in the book, and what they did is they analyzed these ads that were getting these great responses. They wanted to see if there was some relationship between the words that were used in the ads, and so they started analyzing and see what is the most common word to come up with the most persuasive word. And, you know, all these studies, what they kept coming back to was the most common word in these most persuasive ads was the word you. And you know, so basically that's, you know, talking directly to your prospects. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a lot of the ideas in the books are, you know, around that, you know, talking directly to your prospects, using lots of yous and yours in your copy. And, you know, Ted Nicholas, he has this test that he does on any copy that he reads that he's critiquing, where he'll draw two lines down, or draw a line down a single piece of paper. So he has two columns. On the left column, he'll put the words you and your. On the right column, he'll put the words we, our, and then your company name. It'll go through the copy and it'll put a check mark on the number of times you see you and your, and then it'll put a check mark for all the time that you see we, our, or your company name. And then it'll tally them up. And what often happens is you see all these check marks in the we, our, or your company name, and very few in the you and the your column. And so that's how you know that your marketing, that you have an issue with your marketing, that, yeah, you know, it's all about you or your company. You know, so you have to think about, you know, your copy as being just a conversation you're having with prospects. And when you're talking you and I are talking, we talk using like yous and yours and stuff. We're not saying, you know, giving our company name. We're not doing we and our, and we're the greatest at this. And, mm-hmm, you know, that's just, it's uncomfortable. And I use the analogy of, you know, when you have copy like that where there's not a lot of focus on the yous and the yours and it's all about we are your company name, it's like that guy you meet at a party where, you know, immediately you start talking to him and anything that you say, he has something to top it. He's got a story that, you know, is greater than what you can say. All of his comments are all about him. He's the funniest person in the room. And, you know, you just hate talking to those people. Well, it's the same thing with marketing copy. When the copy is all about the company, there's nothing enjoyable about reading it. But when it's about you and, you know, when you're writing that copy from your prospect's perspective, well, then, you know, it's like having that conversation because, you know, again, the conversation's all about, you know, you and, you know, the attention's on you, not on, you know, somebody else. So, mm-hmm, you know, that's kind of the foundation for that, the book, The You Effect. And, you know, the main thing is, you know, using lots of yous and yours in your copy. And so, like the Reluctant Writer's Guide to Creating Powerful Marketing Materials, the chapters are short. They're designed to give you just quick, instant tips that you can start applying immediately.
So where can we get it? Is it on your website? Is it on, are they on Amazon?
Well, they are on, the Reluctant Writer's Guide to Creating Powerful Marketing Materials is on Amazon. Mm-hmm. The U Effect will be on Amazon. And both of them have their own websites. The U Effect, the website is theueffectbook.com, and if you go there, you can get a free chapter, and that site actually is fairly recent. We just put it up, So yeah, you can get a free chapter and then get notified once everything does get released. And there's a book trailer on that site, so you can see what the book's all about. The Reluctant Writer's Guide to Creating Powerful Marketing Materials. That one is available at powerfulmarketingmaterials.com.
Okay.
But then also on Amazon. So I guess the easiest way for both the books, you know, you just go to Amazon. You can pick them up.
Great. And finally, do you have a newsletter so that those who want to just kind of get regular, you know, contact and information from you can get that? And also, you mentioned that you have sort of other information products and training materials. And also even, you know, I know this only applies for people local to you, Tom, but, you know, seminars and workshops too. So could you just let us know a little bit about that?
Yeah. The website to get on, I don't really call it a newsletter. It's just mostly I email my list once or twice a week with just, you know, good tips, educational tips that people can use and apply to their marketing. And if you go to rightwaysolutions.com, that's rightwaysolutions.com, rightwaysolutions.com. You know, that's where you can sign up. There is a I'm always changing the opt-in on there, and right now there's seven. The opt-in is seven quick tips to a more persuasive marketing message. Mm-hmm. And once you opt in there, then you start getting notified of any information products that I make available. You know, announcements about the books, and then just getting good educational material to help with your marketing. So that's where I would direct people to get information about, information products. And then just if they just want to get free advice, I send out once, twice a week, and it's just good, valuable information.
Great. Cool. Well, Tom, thank you, so much for the information, and it's been absolutely awesome. Thank you very much for the time that you've given us, and please, everyone, we'll include links to the websites as well, Tom, where they can get the books and get on your newsletter as well.
All right. Well, thank you, Joey. I really appreciate it. A great time, and I appreciate the opportunity to allow me to share my information.
Thank you. I really, really appreciate it, Tom. It was absolutely awesome. Yeah, everyone, please, go get those two books there. Well, the second one is not out yet, but I'm sure it sounds like it's going to be a great read. So, Tom, thank you very much for that.
Hey, thank you, Joey.
All right. Take care.